Well, phone lines are lit. Cliff Pickover is ready, and I'll be right back for phone calls on Coast to Coast Day. Okay, welcome along to Coast, George Norrie again with our guest, Dr. Clifford Pickover. Clifford, where do you go next? I mean, are you still teaching or just writing? What do you do?
Well, my real day job is working for a large computer company. I used to be very interested in computer graphics and scientific visualization, which is using high-end computer graphics to look at complicated data and reveal patterns to the eye. And on the side, as you can tell, I do writing whenever I can. You know, people ask, Cliff, how did you publish 30 books on, you know, I publish on almost every topic imaginable, mostly popular science, and I always respond, well, on the weekends, some people play golf, and I sit there behind the computer writing.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones, because they're ready. We'll pick it up by going east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast, and where are you calling from? Hi.
Hi, this is Dr. Will. I'm a PhD chemist, biochemist.
Yes, you are. Boy, I know that voice. Hi, Will. Good.
I went into a parallel universe. Only once. By the way, one of my sons is a friend of Linus Tolbetty, Linux system. So he's a computer expert. But he tells me, I'm 71 years old, be a couch potato. Don't try to learn all kinds of stuff anymore. Just enjoy life. I spend most of my time in the wilderness. That's why I haven't written many books, just three. But anyway, now I get to the point. How did I get into a parallel universe? I was coming south a few years back from Duluth, Minnesota, to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And I was a little bit sleepy. I don't want to kill myself or anybody else.
No, that's not a good idea.
So I went into a truck stop just south of Osseo, Wisconsin. And it was hot night, 82 degrees. So I had all my clothes off, and I...
Wait. You had all your clothes off?
Yeah, no shorts, nothing. I'm sure would have been quite a sight for a state trooper.
I would think so, doctor.
Yeah, well, I'm normal otherwise, especially when I'm sleeping.
You could fool me, but go ahead.
Well, anyway, I was trying to take a nap. I had my windows open, and these little tiny mosquitoes were biting me. And I thought to myself, what a bummer. I can't sleep here. So because I'm old, I took one of my shoes that I had on the floor, but I put it on the ground because there was gravel there. It was a truck stop, and I didn't want to have gravel biting in the bottom of my sole. So I passed a little water, got in the car, and drove off. And the next spot, I stopped, and I found out one of my shoes is missing. That's a bummer. They fit me so well. So I said, I'm not going way back there. I drove down to Madison. Next day, I went up there to look for this truck stop to find that shoe. Hopefully, it would be there. I couldn't find it. And I noticed there was a driveway or something that goes to an old truck stop. Now, this is what's interesting. I drove in there. It was an old building and nothing else. And now, when I tried to find my shoe, when I left my shoe there, I noticed something about that truck stop. That was when I took my little nap. It was an old building, and there were old trucks there. I thought, that's mysterious. Why are these old trucks here? So anyway, I drove back down to Madison, and I asked, had there ever been a truck stop south of Osseo, Wisconsin? Oh, yes. Several years ago, there was. But we've torn it down.
How weird.
Yes. So the point raises in my mind, did I in fact enter a parallel universe for a little while and then come back? That parallel universe being some years back when there were other older trucks there.
All right, Cliff, what happened to
you? That's a hard one to answer. Who knows? It doesn't sound like the same type of parallel universe that Stephen Hawking would talk about with his quantum cosmology. But, you know, when you get to talk about the mind and physics and brain states, all sorts of strange things can arise. And you make me think of, you know, Stephen Hawking, he has this idea that there are other universes all around us. And many physicists do believe there are other universes. It's not just some crackpot theory, but who can say about your particular case?
And the only strange part about his story was, I believe in the universe part, running around with nothing on. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello. Got to move on. It's too bad. I know he's there. I could hear him breathing. We're on a delay, and he probably didn't know that. And it took him 9 years to get in, Cliff.
That happens. Next time.
You got it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Steve in Lower Lake, California.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you, sir?
Good.
Dr. Cliff.
Hi.
Let's get right down to the nitty-gritty. We know that there must be a minimum of one God. And you can call it God or Jimmy Joe, Billy Bob, or whatever you want, but something which had no beginning and has existed for all eternity. Would you disagree with that?
Well, it's very complicated when you talk about concepts like eternity. Some of the physicists believe that as we go back close to the Big Bang, time ceased to exist or became intermixed with space or became space-like. I believe the jury is still out about God and time.
But Dr. Cliff, I'm not talking about just this universe. I'm talking about if the eternal I am, or the first uncaused cause, has existed for eternity, then all possible universes have not only existed before, they have existed for an infinite number of times.
What you're saying is certainly possible. As for me, I'm still thinking about it, and I think many scientists are still thinking about it. They're thinking about God, they're thinking about the nature of time, and they're thinking about whether the universe is finite or infinite, and if there are an infinite number of parallel universes as well. Right now, I don't think we have all the answers, but I think it's important that we are discussing it like we are here tonight.
Do you think we'll ever, Cliff, ever get these answers?
I think we'll get a lot of these answers. I mean, look at the theory called string theory, which is quite popular these days, and it posits the existence of 10 or 11 dimensions. You know, these are things the human mind could barely grasp, and yet we are talking about it, and it may provide, you know, the basis for everything in our universe. I believe that science, you know, is not coming to an end, and that we're reaching some sort of limit, and that in many ways, as Isaac Asimov said, knowledge is fractal. As we learn more about something, there's always more to learn, and I don't see a brick wall that we're hitting soon.
Well, Michio Kaku, one of the, I guess, creators of the string theory, he has been a strong proponent on some of the things you've just said.
And Einstein, you know, he had this special theory of relativity and general theory of relativity, and it looks like string theory may be a possible candidate for uniting Einstein's theories with quantum theory, which quantum theory deals with the ultra-small aspects of our universe. And string theory says that all the particles in our universe are like little vibrating strings, like strings on a violin. And you pluck one string, you create an electron. You pluck another string, you create a quark. And it is amazing that we can think about the universe this way. It almost seems like pure mathematics. But again, many of the best physicists in the world are thinking that these things are not just, you know, theoretical, pure mathematical playing, but they actually describe the fabric of reality.
All right, let's go east of the Rockies. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, is this George?
It sure is.
Hi, George. Hi, Cliff. This is Bonnie, and I'm calling from Arkansas.
Hi, Bonnie.
And, hi. This is not your first time on the show, is it? It seems like you had a show about a year ago.
No, I've been on quite a bit. I've been on for about 4 years now. Oh, you're talking about Cliff. No, this is his.
Cliff.
No, Cliff, this is your first time, isn't it?
This is my first time,
yeah.
I believe, on this show, sure.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, you had a guest on, I'd say, I don't know, let's go back even a year, who was talking about the same thing, about the DMT and the pituitary gland in the brain.
Yeah, that was not Cliff.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm sorry to get you confused.
That's okay.
Well, my question is, and you also said that Daniel Brinkley had fast blessed you earlier.
Yes.
Big fan of his also. My first near death experience I had is when I was 4 years old. Well, you know, I had drowned, got brought back to life, and ever since then, you know, my whole life, I have yearned for that, wanted to go back to that, felt that. You know what I'm saying? During my teenage years, I'm very experimental with LSD and magic mushrooms and stuff like that. Older now, over that, more into meditation now. You know. But I have reached those parallel universes. I have been in those places that we're discussing tonight. I have meditated myself into the future. I've seen the Emerald Cities, you know. And I'm seeing, I just want the listeners to know that all this cloning and everything that we're talking about that's in the news, it's coming. And I think that the secret is in that. And I had wondered, have you ever studied the effect of DMT on animals? And if you've ever heard of spirit guides, and what you think about that?
It'd be hard with animals just because they can't really tell us what they're experiencing. I do wonder. I don't think there's been experiments with. I would like to see people doing lucid dreams where they have control while they're dreaming, giving them DMT and seeing their experience. But you mentioned near-death experience. I learned that many people taking DMT or having near-death experiences sort of lose their fear of death, and I wonder if maybe that has occurred with you too.
Well, you know, it's also very, very possible that whatever is out there, whatever people are experimenting with, some of it works. But also, there are some dangers here too. I mean, I don't want people to run to their wherever they go and start trying this.
Definitely not. DMT is illegal. It's powerful. What is a safer alternative is to get my book, Sex, Drugs, Einstein, and Elves, and read all about it for yourself, and you can help me and George figure out what this all may mean.
Oh, that's true. I will do that. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Sean from Reno.
Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Listen, the question I have is about ibogaine and its use in treatment of, like, hard drug addictions. It's a root from Africa. It's a hallucinogen.
Yes, I talk about that in a section of the book. This is... like certain other psychedelic drugs, they seem to all of a sudden cut people's addiction to heroin, alcoholism, and so forth. Even DMT has had some of these reported effects. The one you talk about, yes, it is from an African tree bark. And so there are potential therapeutic uses of all these drugs, and people do think that they can have good effect. Even marijuana seems to be a useful treatment for epilepsy or multiple sclerosis or nausea with chemotherapy, and that's why we shouldn't just throw out all these drugs, and research should continue, in my opinion.
Okay, thanks for being on the program. Of everything that you've written in the book, this one here, Sex, Drugs, Einstein, and Elves, is there one area that puzzles you?
It all puzzles me. I mean, I wonder what these DMT visions mean. There's a section of the book on language, and I'm always wondering about how language shapes our thought. You know, most of these, our thoughts seem to be dictated by our language, and is it possible that language restricts us? It certainly helps us in many ways, but what are we missing because we have a particular language and way of thinking about the universe?
You answer a question in the book. You're the only one who ever has. About whether a penny dropped from the top of the Empire State Building would kill someone if it plopped on his head.
Right, and the answer appears to be no, because the penny, first of all, is not sharp. It's not sharp to a point. It's spinning, and there are drafts of air. And so, the book has lots of curiosity like that, doesn't it? So I sometimes get these reader questions, and I try to answer them. And it appears likely, but don't try this. It appears like the penny will not kill you if it hits you from the Empire.
Yeah, don't drop it on people, those of you in New York.
Yeah, don't try it, but it looks like it's one of these, I explore the physics of it, and it looks like it would not kill you.
International caller, where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi, I'm calling from England.
England, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good morning, George. Good morning, Cliff.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm truly fascinated by geniuses in general. Listening to them and listening to you, what tells me that you are one of the blessed geniuses is that you're not absolutely positive about what you espouse, what you talk about. And I think that's one of the signs of genius. So could I ask you two brief questions?
Sure.
One is a genius friend of mine that I believe to be genius 20 years ago told me that Google, what the meaning of Google was, because it was just a word that was being bounced around about 20 years ago. And he explained to me, and I think it might have morphed in my head, so I want to get the exact meaning if I can, which was that he told me it was something like the highest number that is generally used in math, a one with, I think, 100 zeros, something like this. And Googleplex would be then to the factor of. Is that close?
Very close. I mean, huge numbers fascinate me. And Google, spelled differently than the Google search engine, was a term invented that is a huge number. And you said it right. It's one with 100 zeros following it. These numbers are types of things that, you know, again, the human mind can barely contemplate something so huge. Yet mathematicians deal with these types of huge numbers all the time. And you're right, a Googleplex is a number that's even larger.
That goes maybe to the factor of?
It has a Google zeros following the one.
Oh, okay.
And
you
know, and there are numbers I discuss in some of my books that are even bigger than a Googleplex.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering about. And if you don't mind, the second question briefly.
Sure.
You've already touched on it from one of the other callers, but I'm fascinated with the thought that currently that we have, what's the telescope in space that sees the furthest out?
Hubble right now. And then there's the Chandra.
Right. And one of the two is seeing close to the what we understand to be the end of the universe, somewhere near 13.5, and I've heard different numbers thrown around. And if we're getting so close to seeing towards the end of the universe, shortly I assume that we could see towards the, in fact, end of the universe. Therefore, what might we see just beyond that as a theoretical thought?
Excellent.
Well, here's the thing.
Sure thing.
We only know about what's called the visible universe. We can imagine our universe as a bubble that exists in a vaster universe, but we can't see beyond that because it has to do with the speed of light and the fact that the universe was created about 13 billion years ago. We don't even know about the shape of space. Some people say that the universe could curve back on itself. It could be like the surface of a sphere or like a donut. You might be able to look out in space and see your back if you could look far enough. These are all questions that we're beginning to try to answer by looking out in space and looking at the distribution of stars and background radiation. But again, we don't even know if the universe is finite or infinite. These are all still questions.
Okay, well, stay with us because we'll be back with Cliff Pickover in just a moment with final calls. By the way, if you aren't a Streamlink member yet for just 25 cents a day, that's about what it comes up to, 25 cents a day. If you're a member now of Streamlink, you can get and download Art's 1997 interview with Terrence McKenna, one of the classic shows. We've been talking about Terrence McKenna and his thoughts on DMT. But you can do that. You can join Streamlink and take advantage of getting that downloaded as well. And then you can keep it forever. I'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, it'll be our Friday into Saturday night open lines. And I am going to play for you a Russian exorcism of a girl. This runs about 2 minutes, 40 seconds. It's an excerpt of the entire exorcism. I ran about 20 seconds of it a few days ago. So those of you who like the ear exorcisms, get ready for this one. By the way, Richard C. Hoagland's new captain's blog is up on Hurricane Control. You might want to take a look at what he calls striking new evidence of outright control of Ophelia, for example. So go take a look at that at enterprisemission.com under his captain's blog. Listen to this story, by the way. The Danish Air Force has paid $5,032 in compensation to a part-time Santa Claus whose reindeer died of a heart attack when two fighter jets roared over his farm. The animal, named Rudolph, was grazing peacefully at the central Denmark farm of Olavi Nikakonofoff when the screaming F-16 jets passed overhead at low altitude. The reindeer Rudolph collapsed and died, leaving good old St. Nick with the prospect of only one animal pulling his sleigh next Christmas. He complained to the Air Force, which agreed to compensate him for the cost of the reindeer and vet expenses. He got a letter from Santa complaining about his reindeer's death, and we looked into it seriously, and we decided, yep, we were responsible for the death of the reindeer. So those of you who are a little concerned about Santa Claus this coming Christmas, not to worry. He's got enough cash to buy another reindeer. Okay, Cliff, I waited until it got a little later. Why do you have sex on the name of this book?
Sex. Besides it selling, no. The sex is, I have many topics in the book dealing with popular culture and biology, in addition to some of the topics we've been talking, like parallel universes and DMT visions. Sex, well, one of the topics I talk about is a mystery that California coast residents were hearing eerie sounds from the waters, and no one knew what it was. It was like a perfect A flat that droned for hours, and some people blame these ghostly drones on secret experiments performed by the Army Corps of Engineers. It turns out that's not an alien life form or something from the Army, but it's something called the humming male toadfish that produces this as a sex or
mating
call.
Humming male toadfish?
Yes. And it produces this incessant underwater droning. It's extremely loud. In fact, scientists are looking at its muscles. How can it do this? Maybe they can learn something to treat human diseases. And this type of fish, there's two types of males, a big one and a little one. And the big one usually gets the girl, but the little one pretends to be a female. And while the male, big guy goes for it, it fertilizes the eggs. So that's one instance of sex. And I also talk about various ways.
Well, I want to know more about this fish.
Okay.
What does it sound like?
Well, it's a low A flat, like a drone.
You wouldn't happen to have it on tape, would you?
No, I wish I did. Maybe we can find it on the net. And it came from the Sausalito waters, you know, off of California.
Maybe somebody is sitting by their piano or some kind of apparatus they can play an A flat for us.
Yeah, and it would go on for hours and hours, and people were wondering, what is this strange sound coming from the ocean? And it did turn out to be this toadfish. It's also called the midshipman. It's an ugly kind of creature, about a foot long, and it has this powerful musculature that lets
it. Well, I'll give it to you that there are a lot of scientific evidence, I guess, for what people might think were strange or paranormal or conspiratorial events. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You always have to look at the real science first. But once you do that, then there's a lot that is unexplained, I think.
There's plenty of unknown and plenty of unexplained. We talked about a lot of it tonight, you know, whether it's in science and physics or religion. We are basically swimming in a sea of mystery, and even as science learns more and technology increases through this century, I think we'll be continuing to swim in this sea of mystery.
Back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. Where are you calling from? You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George.
Yes, hi.
Hey.
Hi.
It's Elsie from Kentucky.
Go ahead, Elsie.
How are you?
Good. Elsie?
Hello.
Go ahead, Elsie.
Oh, okay. I have a question and a comment.
Gotta go, Elsie. We don't have that kind of time. Turn your radios down. It's a delay. You're hearing yourself, and it baffles you. Sorry, Elsie, I had to let you go, but I had no other choice. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
John from Illinois, and I had a question concerning earlier in the interview, you spoke of elves and some ingesting of some substances.
You sure did. There you go with your DMT again, Cliff.
Well,
see what you've done?
It reminded me of an.
Hello.
Looks like we lost him.
Boy, the phones are playing with us today.
Hello.
Yeah, there you are.
And I think.
Where'd you go?
I don't know. And I think the interview was with a man named Pinchbeck. Do you recall? Is there any similarity between?
No, Pinchbeck.
There is a Daniel Pinchbeck who wrote a book, Breaking Open the Head, who talks about the.
Might have been him.
There are many authors who are talking about this particular drug and how it seems to let users access a different universe that's inhabited by these sparkling palaces and strange beings. And I'm hoping, as I said before, that we can continue to do research to see what we can learn about the human mind or even reality itself by exploring this drug further in research settings.
Okay, very good. Thanks. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. My gosh, what's happening? We're being invaded. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Brian from Houston News Radio 740 KTRA.
Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Earlier, y'all were talking about the correlation between drugs and creativity. And I have fibromyalgia, which is a muscular arthritis, and I'm on a pretty powerful narcotic to relieve the pain from that. And it's over the years, I have had several, I guess you would call them creative moments that I kind of have when I'm, you know, taking the drug. And come up with several inventions and then not followed through. And then years later, somebody else would, you know, actually come up with it. People would usually just laugh at me and say, oh, yeah, right, you dreamed this or something. But the latest one was I had envisioned a car wash, one of these manual car washes where you walk up the quarters in and wash the car. I'd actually drawn it out, even contacted the Small Business Administration to try to get a loan, and was unable to, so I just kind of filed it away. And about a year later, another couple built one on the exact same spot. They built it almost exactly the same plans that I did, and even named it the same name that I did. And before they even broke ground, I pulled my plans out and showed them to my wife and said, here, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I have done several times and not been able to follow through for one reason or another. So I was wondering if you might kind of explain the what you were talking about, the relationship between different drugs and creativity.
Well, it also sounds like you're talking about something called synchronicity and coincidence, where, you know, you're saying, wow, you were just thinking about this and someone else did the same thing at the same location. Some mystics and philosophers and scientists have likened reality to ocean waves, and we notice the top of the waves, but beneath the surface there may be some kind of mechanism that connects them. You talk about creativity. I'm very interested in genius and creative minds and the brain. There are various brain states that seem to foster creativity, and even something you might call diseases like temporal lobe epilepsy that seem to make some great writers and artists more creative through history.
By the way, Daniel Pinchbeck's been on the program several times with Art and Me. I think his first time he was on around 2002. One of his books, Prophecy, Crop Circles, and Psychedelics. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
There, is this me?
Yep, your turn.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to speak with you. I've been listening for years, and it's the first time I've been able to get through.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask your guest if he's ever heard of Yahe. It's in English, it's Vine of the Soul. The first time I heard about it was I was watching the X-Files one night, and it was just this concoction of plants and herbs and stuff, and that they would drink this in ceremonial.
Yes, this is exactly what we've been talking about. Another name for that is this ayahuasca, which is made from two Amazonian plants, and it contains both this drug DMT and a special inhibitor chemical, because normally if you would take DMT, the stomach acids would inactivate it, and the combination of plants, which is what you're talking about, produce this psychedelic effect. it's interesting that the Amazonian natives could figure out without, you know, all the thousands of plants which two to combine to get this effect, but apparently they did.
Yeah, because when I first heard it and when I saw the, I mean, I've been a sensitive for years, and just one other comment. I know we're short on time, so I probably won't get to that, but I saw it on the X-Files, and I'm like, oh, come on, you know. I did look it up on the Internet, and it actually is a real concoction that these people drink, and they do ceremonial things, and of course on the X-Files it got out of hand, but
it's better television that way.
But pardon me,
it's better television that way.
Oh yeah, of course, because they, you know, they want, I still watch all the reruns, but if I do have a minute, George, I know that you've done shows before about people that are sensitive and getting precognitive things, and
right.
I had something really strange happen to me about 3-4 months ago. I just got a new puppy. He's a little mini pincher.
Yeah.
And my cat at the same time had gotten pregnant. And I didn't, you know, I knew she was pregnant and all, and she had the kittens, and they were all fine. And the first day I started my new job in July, it was July 25th, first Monday, I went into this job, and I'm working in a place where we assemble things. You know, we assemble hose assemblies.
Mm-hmm.
I got to pressure testing something, and I got back by this one part of the building, and I took a panic attack like I hadn't had in years. And I was like, man, that wasn't a regular panic attack. I knew it was either a warning or something. A week almost to the day, it was the following Saturday, actually, that little mini pin had killed all four kittens.
Oh, my God.
And I said, the weird thing was, is I was in my head when I took the panic attack, all I could hear was, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And as soon as I seen the mother kitten come out with the first dead one, that's all that came. I was screaming in the house, and my husband came in, and he said, what's wrong? I said, he killed them all. He killed all the kittens. And that's, so I knew it was a warning, but at the time when I got the warning, I didn't know what it meant.
Right.
And I just wanted to relate that, and you know, if anybody else has ever had something like that happen, but that was the worst precognitive thing I've ever had happen.
That is horrible. Why are sometimes, Cliff, do you get into that at all in the book?
About precognition?
Yes.
Well, I do talk about, the subconscious mind being powerful, and even in dream states, you know, I see this in my own life. I get so many ideas while dreaming that's as if it's opening some kind of gate. I also talk about something called future life progression in the book. Most of us have heard about past life regression, where under hypnosis, it looks like you can, regress people to past lives. And skeptics would say, of course, that, you know, it's fantasy. But I talk about the opposite, which people may not have heard of, which people try to progress into the future under hypnosis. And then I talk about the types of visions they see.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. We've got a few more moments left. Hi there.
It's Wanda from Los Angeles.
Wanda, how close are you to the wildfires?
I'm actually on the other side of the valley.
Ah, okay. Can you smell smoke, though?
You know, those fires started at Stony Point, which was the sacred Indian land.
Yes. Very sad there. Yeah.
The tribe that was local around here, the Yahoo tribe. They were Jimson Weed Coat. Anyway, I wanted to ask the guest, when he considers the possibility of the existence of God or a God, the universe that is, or the cosmos that's eternal or finite, which one would be more likely to have a God?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, if you postulate God being omniscient and omnipotent and so forth, all-knowing, all-seeing, I don't know which would be more likely.
It seems to me that a finite would be likely, it would have to, a finite universe would have to have a God.
It would seem a little easier to create, wouldn't it? Something finite than infinite. But
could I ask you one more thing?
But if God is all-powerful, perhaps he can do both. Okay.
Well, if the universe, if it happens that as you get to the border, the edge, and it just goes back and loops around, would that be considered an infinite universe or finite?
You could have a finite universe. Like, pretend you're living on the top of a ball. You have a little ant walking on the ball. Right, he never really reaches the edge. He can keep walking and walking and walking forever and come back to where he started. That's an example of a curved universe that is finite.
How about the idea that, like with the ingression of novelty, or even like, I guess his name was Morris, the speeding up, this telescoping of data, information, experience, all of this, with the beginning of humanity being kind of, well, not kind of, simple, and through thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, everything becomes increasingly complex. The analogy being like there's one strand to start off with, which bifurcates, branches off. until ultimately at some point in the future or whenever, it becomes so dense, like a piece of fabric that's weaved together until it becomes a single piece of
humanity.
It
looks like it's gone through these various ages, like the agricultural revolution, industrial. Now we're sort of in an information or technology revolution. I believe the next revolution will be the revolution of the mind, where we understand the mind better. But many researchers like Ray Kurzweil say that we'll be approaching a singularity, which means, like you're saying, the knowledge and technology is increasing so fast that within this century we're going to hit something very strange, which, again, we can't predict because the pace is so fast.
We'll take one more quick phone call. That'll be at International Line. Where are you calling from?
St. Joe's, Costa Rica.
Ah, hello, sir. Go ahead.
I'll make it quick. I'm totally blind. I'm an attorney from St. Joe's, Costa Rica, and practice in the United States. Previously, I spoke with a guest that was on this show by the name of Matthew Alper, who
yes.
produced a book, God Part or the God Brain Part. I'm sorry if I said it wrong.
Pretty close.
Pretty close. In the United States, where I'm from originally, you've got a couple hundred thousand blind people, and there are some chat lists on the internet that talk about blind people who see things in their dream. Now, I'm talking about people who are totally blind like me. I have zero eyes. I can't see squat. How in their brain or their mind do they see things such as, well, what you're referring to as parallel universes and so forth, if the brain itself, according to Matthew Alper, is programmed to use that as a, I want to say a catch-all or a sanctity or to give the person peace of mind that something exists after this life.
See, that will be a question, I think, for all of us to ponder. The name of that book, by the way, is The God Part of the Brain. This one we're talking about with Cliff Pickover, Sex, Drugs, Einstein, and Elves. Cliff, we're out of time, but I want to thank you. We'll ponder his answer. Maybe you can email it to me, and I'll read it on my show tomorrow, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You got a deal. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, who does Saturdays, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.